Radio Today program with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
It's the Radio Today program, and this week we're at the British Library in central London for this year's Radio Festival, the Radio Festival 2018. Radio Today's editor Roy Martin is here.
Morning, Stuart.
Are we looking forward to a good day?
It's going to be great, yeah. This is the fourth one at the British Library in central London. Looks like a good schedule, good lineup for the rest of the day, and we're looking forward to covering it as ever on radiotodaylive.com.
And after the event, you'll be able to catch up on all those tweets. There'll be stories on Radio Today, of course, as well. And over the course of this podcast, you're going to be hearing from some of the big names appearing at the festival this year, including Nigel Farage, Jeremy Vine, and Christine O'Connell. Bob Shannon is here, the director of radio and music at the BBC, talking a lot about the importance of music to radio today.
Yeah, I think radio continues to be such an important part of the development of what is an incredibly successful music industry for the UK. And I don't think there's any coincidence that we have a very, very strong, healthy radio sector that supports it. So I think it's a message worth saying, particularly at these times of great technological change.
And you mentioned that the heads of some of the big record labels are British, and they cite UK radio as being an important thing for music.
I was merely repeating what I'd read, which was, I mean, quite an amazing quote from Rob Stringer, the boss of Sony Worldwide, who said that he thinks one of the reasons that Warner, Sony, Universal are led by Brits, and that Britain is so important in the global music scene, is because of the influence of BBC Radio, which, well, we'll take that.
And you've got a massive event coming up at the end of this month. Is that a little bit too ambitious, or are you confident that it's going to be a big success?
I hope it is. It's a bit late now if it's not.
It's the biggest thing the BBC's ever done for a music festival.
For a kind of intensive weekend music festival, it is, yeah. 4 days across four nations on BBC One, BBC Two, BBC Four, all the music radio, and of course online. It's a huge undertaking. And actually, really, probably only the BBC could do that because of our multi-platform base, and would want to do it because of our commitment to music, which is such an important ingredient of public service broadcasting. So, you know, we normally have Glastonbury, but Glastonbury is rested this year, so we decided we'd broaden the base and we'd put a BBC face on it, and hopefully we'll reach millions and millions of people with glorious musical entertainment.
And across radio, we're obviously championing those established acts, but the BBC in particular does a lot for emerging and new talent. And looking at the detail of what you've just announced today, a massive event going to happen later this year under the BBC Introducing banner.
It's not going to be massive in terms of scale. I hope it will be really significant in terms of impact. We did a sort of toe-in-the-water event at the end of last year, which was an event that just engaged people who want to know how to crack the musical code, if you like. And it was such a success. And now BBC Introducing is 10 years old. We thought, where do we take it from here? And one of the places I think we can take it is into far more of this kind of reaching out to real people and helping them on their mission in music. There's huge support from the music industry and right around the BBC. Introducing is one of those things that is incredibly important to the sort of nourishment and development of new talent. And we want to make it even more impactful in the future. So we're going to put on a weekend event in November. It'll be based in London, and hopefully it's something that we can grow over forthcoming years, and it will become a really, really valuable resource, which, though we'll reflect on air, will be a proper off-air resource to people who want to get on in the world of music.
And the big thing in BBC Radio at the moment is about podcast first online content that you're creating. I know you made a big announcement at Radio Days about that. That tends to be focused about speech radio. Is it harder to do music-based podcasts because of licensing issues and rights issues?
Yeah, I mean, the reason there aren't as many in music is because of rights.
You can still talk about music, though.
Of course you can, and it doesn't mean you can't do anything, and there are probably ingenious ways that we can develop that whole area, and we should, and people will, I'm sure. Yeah, I mean, I think you know, it's really, really important in our future that we are mindful of the need to kind of reconnect with new audiences. And we know there are an awful lot of people who love consuming audio content on demand. they don't necessarily automatically tune into the radio. I'd kind of like them to do that, and maybe they'll come to radio, but certainly they'll get satisfaction from the BBC in audio.
And just finally, you were obviously the controller of Radio 2, and you made the change bringing Chris to breakfast and Simon to drive. We've perhaps the next biggest change since then happened this week with Joe joining Simon on drive. Did you hear any of the first show, and are you pleased?
Yeah, I did. I was very pleased. And, you know, it's kind of felt like it's been a long time in gestation, this change. It sounded exactly as I expected. They're both such brilliant professionals, and crucially, they like each other, and that's such an important part if you're going to ever have double-headed presentation. So, I think it was a really encouraging start. But of course, we also had Sarah Cox doing the new show late at night, and Keris Matthews doing the blues show, and the overnight's going live again. So, you know, a lot of change. But you know, although people don't always see it, radio is always changing, always innovating. You look back over the years at schedules of all the major radio stations, they shift quite rapidly, much more rapidly than people think. And new, incredibly strong, loyal habits are forged very quickly. And I'm sure people are going to love the new Joe and Simon partnership for years to come.
Gillian Reynolds is here, now of the Sunday Times. Are you enjoying your new job?
I am, very much, yes. New readership. Marvellous boss, and a very cheery ambience in the office.
Do you write differently for the Times now?
No. When I got the contract, there was this contract clause in it that said you will engage with social media. And I said, if this is a deal breaker, the deal is broken. I am not engaging with social media because it consumes you. You know, it takes all your attention all the time, all the time. It's like having Quins who cry all the time, you know. So they said, oh, don't worry about that, you know, just if it becomes necessary, we'll get someone to do it for you, with you. So that was a slight thing. And the other thing was that I'm now on the same page as a famously barbed television critic. And when I met my boss, Helen, I said to her, you know, I don't write like Camilla Long at all. And she just opened her eyes and she said, we want you to write like you. So that was all.
Yeah. We had a discussion on this podcast with Trevor Dann last week about radio critics. Yeah. And I know it was touched on stage here at the festival about the focus on the BBC. And I know because you came from commercial radio, you perhaps shout a bit more for commercial radio. Do you think we have a problem with critics only listening to preview audio generally and doing the things that Radio 3 and 4 send because it's an easier write?
It's not an easier write because they send it. What makes it difficult to write about commercial radio is that so much of it is so formulaic, and there's not much you can do unless somebody is showing an unusual strain of talent, or there's a new kind of presentational aspect, or somebody decides that football has to be done a different way. You know, fine. But they never let you know what's on. They never let you know if there's a change, either in schedule or ownership or whatever. Radio Centre does its best, but it's difficult. It's also very difficult. This sounds a bit proud, but it's also very difficult to take seriously somebody who sent you a programme out of the blue and has clearly never read you. You know, this is a two-way street here. Do you know what I do? No. Do you expect me to know what you do? Maybe. You know.
And do you always listen to... I know you're a fan of Five Live Breakfast and the Today programme, and you switch around, but do you always listen to the same things, or do you try new radio listening and things that you've perhaps heard before and didn't like, and you go back to it?
Well, you know, there are things in the week you have to make room for. When Nigel Farage arrived on LBC, I made room for him. Jacob Rees-Mogg is, honest to God, it's the nearest thing radio's got to the Dandy and the Beano. I mean, who'd miss that? Even Nick Ferrari's in pleats.
And in terms of your regular day, is the radio on all day long in your house?
The radio is on in different ways, in different rooms, more or less all the time. If I'm listening to music, actually, although I've got brilliant speakers and a very good hi-fi, I actually put the television on. and go through to the, go to the radio bit and put the concert on, because it's easier to find than on a tuner.
And in terms of this week, a big change at Radio 2, Joe Wiley's joined the daytime lineup. Yeah. You're not a fan?
Not yet.
But you've only heard one show?
Yes, that's why I say not yet.
But will you go back to it in a few months? Is that how you do it?
Oh, I'll go back to it before 2 months, you know. It's fair to say that such a radical scheduled shake-up deserves time. You know, one element has to marry with the other and there will be changes. But I loved Simon Mayo's show, you know, I really did. And I would quite often listen to that. I don't drive, so I can't work out how to listen to it on the phone and not be distracted by people on the bus.
And this week we're expecting digital listening to hit the magic 50%. Is this a topic you might be writing about?
Well, I expect there's a lot of politics in it, so they might want someone political writing about it. But I'd be quite happy to write about it, because it's a massive switch. People don't remember what it was like when the frequencies are allocated at the BBC and Radio 2 went solely on FM and long wave, and everyone had to buy a new radio. And most of us are still using the same old radios. You know, they never die. And you just put new batteries in them and on they go. So I'm worried about if the digital switch off for two reasons. One is the plethora of radio sets. And, you know, do we all have to go digital? Two, digital radio is not faultless. It drops out. Sometimes it vanishes. Sometimes it sounds like the bat coming down the chimney. And three, the smaller stations who can't afford to go digital will all suffer. And I'm thinking of community stations, you know. But even on the commercial tier, there are a lot of small stations that will really suffer because of this. Nobody ever thinks of that, because there are those big, bold barons jousting with their lances at each other at the top of the commercial playing field.
So perhaps for the final time on the Radio Today programme, we can welcome Christine O'Connell.
I hope it's not for the final time, because you never know in life, Stuart. You might end up in Australia and I might end up here overnight on Radio 2, or that's if it goes well.
You're aiming high there, Radio 2.
Let's just say the last chat for now is to be continued. Can we agree that?
Yeah.
How many years have you and I been chatting at various radio festivals?
It's probably 12 years.
Yeah, I would think so, since it was Virgin Radio then.
And I've been your lucky charm every time I turn up at an awards do.
I win an award, so I'm screwed without you in Australia. I need you to move out there and relocate. Go work for Australian Radio Today.
Well, they've got big money, apparently, I hear. They've got a lot of resources.
It's not gone on me.
How are you feeling? Obviously, this week is the last few shows, getting quite emotional about it now, but excited at the same time.
Yeah, it's all of that, and it varies from minute to minute. So, yeah, it is. I'm really excited, very grateful to have this huge, big challenge. And if you follow my career, whether or not you listen to the show, I'd hope you respect the fact that I've always sought out new challenges, how I do the show. And so something like this is a really big challenge. To go to the other side of the world 2 weeks after I finish here, after 12 years on this show on national radio, and then see if I can make it work doing a breakfast show in Australia. It's nuts when you think about it.
And you've obviously known about it, and your boss Paul has known about it for quite a long time. How have you approached it in terms of on air? It's just these last few weeks you've actually announced the date and you're kind of now talking about it.
Yeah, we didn't want to overdo it. It's a balance, isn't it? Because I live so much of my life on air, but I'm aware that they just want to hear the show. We agreed to only tell them 2 weeks beforehand, so it's not some long drawn out funeral or on air wake, because I still want to come and do the show that I love doing. And but also it's the only thing in my life right now, so there's so much stuff I want to talk about and share with them, which is funny and odd. It's been overwhelming at times, the response from the listeners.
And you had this bucket list of things you wanted to do before the show. I loved the Battleships video with Richie. That must have been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was. It was great. But again, that only got made because our listeners lent us a lake. It's a millionaire listener. I didn't know any of my listeners had cash and millions. And then a film crew that did it for free. A pyrotechnics company that gave debt. There was 40 people on that shoot that gave their time up for free, which is incredible. And only radio can do that. That's when it showcases what the power of what radio can do and how it can bring people together. That's why I love it.
And 20 years on Breakfast with 2CR, Juice, XFM, Virgin Absolute. Is there one of those that you can pick out as enjoying the most? Which were the best times on Breakfast?
I've really enjoyed the last couple of years because you kind of, I think as you get a bit older, you take a monkey off your back that you're not where you should be, or that person's doing that, why aren't you there? And I managed to sort of quieten that down a bit and just appreciate it a bit more. The time at XFM was what really made me, and you don't get radio like that anymore. That station was incredible. You look at who was on it: Richard Bacon, Zoe Ball, Kevin Greening, the late great Kevin Greening, Zane Lowe was doing the evening show, Ricky, Carl Pilkington was my exec producer for 5 years, Adam and Joe. What a lineup on this tiny indie radio station. That 5 years there was incredible, and that'll always be very, very special. But then 12 years on national radio, to survive that, it's like swimming with sharks. It's like 18 different owners, it's changed name. But yeah, the last couple of years I've really, really enjoyed, because I think I've grown some new skills in terms of how I use radio and my mindset to radio, and that's been really, really nice as well.
And tell us about the new show. You're taking one person with you from Absolute.
Yeah, I'm taking my producer, who is from Melbourne, who showed up 18 months ago just looking for work, and then bizarrely I'm taking him back to help me launch the show for a couple of months, and then he's come back here because he still loves the UK. So he's like a kind of lucky rabbit's foot, and he can, I guess, translate. He can speak Christian to the locals.
And you're going back to work with Duncan as well, who you work with at GDBR Group.
Yeah, our paths crossed then, 2019, 18 years ago. It's weird, isn't it? Radio, even global radio, it's still a small place. Very passionate man, very, very bold man to do something like this. If it doesn't work, it's not just me getting fired. Duncan is linked to me as well, so no pressure. But for him to do something like this is really risky. You know, you're bringing an outsider who's unknown and give them a major breakfast show, which is doing really well. I appreciate in our industry that doesn't happen very often. So I hope I don't let him down or his vision down. We will see.
And the big question is, now you're not going to be here in the UK, who's going to win those big awards at the ARIAS?
Well, I think that there's some really, really exciting talent and some future talent coming through as well. So it's not like radio is not going to exist anymore. It will do fine without me. Yeah, so.
And you're taking all the awards with you. You're going to ship them over.
Do you know what? I actually gave some to the kids. I don't have as many as you think, because it would be so big-headed, wouldn't it? I think people think I must have a mantelpiece with all these awards. I've taken a couple just to walk around the streets of Melbourne, you know, just trying to intimidate people. Go, I'm a pretty big deal back over there. You might not care for me. Back home, I was a thing.
And you're just about to go on stage at the radio festival. What kind of reception are you expecting from the industry?
Indifferent, like always. You know, they look a bit dead-eyed, don't they? This is a dead slot. It's lunchtime. No, I'm lucky. They slotted me in when they found out I was leaving, which is really kind. The Academy and the festival, they've always been really kind and generous to me. And predominantly, this is a BBC event with outside speakers. So it always means a lot that they let grubby people from, you know, commercial radio like me come in, as long as we take our shoes off.
You did get a stab at the BBC in your career here in the UK.
That's right, I did. I loved it. I did Fighting Talk twice, which was a phenomenal show. I covered for Bacon. I've covered Danny Baker. I've been very lucky to work both sides.
And you're obviously going to be doing a podcast that listeners back in the UK will be able to hear. Might we expect you to pop up on some radio stations here and there here in the UK down the line?
I really hope so. Yeah, absolutely. I've got a lot of people that I know and love who do radio over here, and I wish them all the best. I can be, you know, like Alistair Cook, correspondent, letter from America. I'll be the letter from the DJ from Australia. I'll be the man down under. I'll be a correspondent.
Well, I did that actually on 5 Live a few years ago. We had Limo on, you're replacing on Gold.
Easy, all right. Let's keep it light, mate. Come on, Stuart.
But no, we were talking about the Melbourne Cup, the horse racing, and we got him on 5 Live.
So. That is a sport mad city. Grand Prix, got the horse racing, AFL. It's a really big, exciting city. And I can't wait to get there and try and find my way through it.
Well, we wish you all lots
thanks,
of luck.
Stuart. I really appreciate your support.
Good luck
with
the family move as well.
Oh,
and
thanks,
we'll miss you on the air here.
Thank you very much, Stuart. Good luck, mate. Thanks for support.
Broadcast Bionics brings you Phone Box, Oasis, Virtual Director, and many more innovative solutions for creative radio people. Come to bionics.co.uk and find out more.
I'm here with Paul Sylvester from Absolute and Richie, Christian's co-host for the last couple of days. For another couple of days. How are you feeling about him going?
In denial. Honestly, in denial. Because the show's been just as it has been. Since Christian said he was leaving, nothing's changed. And we enjoy it so much. I think we've actually been trying to make sure we're still enjoying it rather than thinking, no, this is ending soon. So I think it's going to hit me like a bus.
And so who was the first person he told out of you two? Was it the boss or the co-host?
Oh, I don't know, actually. There were parallel conversations happening. I'd already worked it out. So we had a meeting where I knew what was going to happen and he knew what was going to happen. But I think the conversation that he had with you, he described it as one of the worst moments of his life, having that conversation. And I think that was a mark of what a big decision it was. And we've all known about it for 5 months, even before we went on the radio. And I think for me, what's been really impressive is how the show has still kept at the top of its game. This isn't a show that was going to peter out. The show is going out with a bang. And I think that's what the listeners who've bought into the show really deserve.
What are you going to miss most about working with him? Sorry, let me rephrase that. Are you going to miss anything about working with him?
Yes, no, I am. The reason it's difficult to answer it quickly is to put your finger on one thing. And I can't put my finger on one thing. I know that's a really crap answer, but I will miss everything. Some miss more than others.
And Paul, obviously Dave is taking over soon. Yep. How's your kind of succession and moving on for life after Christian and Absolute going?
I mean, it is really interesting because obviously what's been really nice is they're both on air at the moment. Dave is talking about Christian. Christian is talking about Dave. We're all planned and ready to go with Dave's show, which is really exciting. We're enjoying the last week of Christian. And I hope that what the industry maybe sees from this is how to handle departures. I hate it when I see presenters effectively kicked off air, disposed of, not talked about, because I think it's wrong for the audience. And I hope, if anything, the listeners enjoy this period. We're enjoying this period. It's a really exciting, you know, time for Absolute Radio as we head into our 10th birthday, a new breakfast show, more exciting stuff, more exciting announcements to come in the next few weeks. So it's really exciting time, and I think that's creating a really good buzz around the radio station, and it's really good for the listeners as well. So it's exciting, it's busy.
And Richie, you've just been on stage here at the festival to present Christian with a gold award from the Radio Academy, essentially a lifetime achievement. It was nice of him to kind of say that a lot of this is down to you.
It was flattering. I was stood in the wings with the award and heard some other nice things as well. It's a shame I have to come to a festival to actually hear those nice things. But some lovely things that I'm not entirely certain I deserve. But yeah, it's been a lovely day.
Alistair Campbell is here. And in terms of radio, we've gone quite speech heavy recently. There's a lot of discussion and debate, and obviously the political climate at the moment enables people to be quite outspoken. Yep. Is that a good thing?
Depends what they're saying. I mean, I think that one of the problems with the debate at the moment is that it's just become very, very shouty and polarised. Whether that's, and I think the influence of Trump on that has been absolutely catastrophic for politics, diplomacy, and indeed for media. You know, I've had quite an interesting relationship with radio in a way. I do like radio. Stations I probably listen to most, I listen to Radio 5 a lot because of the sport. I listen to Talk Sport a bit, but I find that gets very shouty very quickly as well. I'm very into soft music. I'm into Heart and Magic and all that stuff when I'm kind of, you know, a bit mellow. I listen to a lot of French radio. I listen to German radio as well because I like to keep my languages kind of going. But I do think that the nature of the debate's got very, very shouty. And I, you know, I had a little dig at the BBC in there just now because I do think that on Brexit, there's a real kind of dereliction of duty at the moment because it's almost as if they're covering it like it's happened, and it's just a fait accompli, and the ramifications I don't think are being properly ventilated in the public debate. So I think radio's got a lot to answer for, and not much time to redeem itself.
And a few years ago, we wouldn't have probably had characters like Farage getting a radio show. You might not agree with his views, but is it good that somebody with such strong views can have a daily show on the radio?
I don't have an opposition to that per se. I do think it is utterly ridiculous that he, I think, is second virtually only to David Dimbleby in terms of the number of times he's been on Question Time. I do think Farage is a very effective broadcaster, I have to say. I've done his show, and although you all know what his views are and he uses it to kind of propagate those views, he does engage properly in debate to some extent, and he's got a very good kind of manner for radio, I think. So I don't have an objection to that per se. What I think is a problem is if there's a feeling that you can only have radio presenters who are going to be very, very controversial. I think you have to have a mix. And, you know, LBC... I tell you who I think is absolutely brilliant at the moment is James O'Brien. I think some of his, I mean, and it's not just because I agree with a lot of what he says. I think it's just the fact that he frames his arguments incredibly well. But I do worry about that general trend towards a more kind of shouty, aggressive, not terribly measured view of how to have a debate. And I think social media is exacerbating that big time.
I said this to Julia Hartley Brewer a couple of weeks ago when I interviewed her on this podcast, that perhaps with Brexit and things going particularly to the left wing with Corbyn in Labour and very right wing in the Tories, that middle ground is lost. And actually, like beauty's in the eye of the beholder, the bias is in the ear of the listener. And if you've got a particular strong view one way, yeah, you will hear bias easier.
That is very true. And it's like, I mean, I was at a meeting in Stoke recently, and there were some people there, and I was arguing, as I do, that I think the BBC coverage of Brexit since the referendum has been a disgrace. And they were saying exactly the same, but completely from the different perspective. And we couldn't understand what the other was saying, because, I mean, I have no doubt. I was giving them chapter and verse, but they would just say, no, the BBC is totally Remain. And, you know, so that is true. But I think one of the things that happened, you mentioned Labour and Corbyn, for example. So, and I understand that in a way, the radio and BBC in particular sort of reflect the political realities. Now, if you've got the government saying we're going hard Brexit, you've got the Labour opposition saying, well, we might disagree with this, but it's going to happen, then I understand that. But what it does mean is, if those debates are being conducted on the extremes, who is analysing all that stuff that isn't properly being debated in Parliament? And I think there's a real problem there. So I do think that the media generally has been very, very cowed by this idea that, you know, the people voted on June the 23rd, 2016, therefore you can't challenge that. So I will carry on challenging it. And if anybody out there wants me to come on their radio show and tell them why Brexit's a total disaster, very happy.
Well, you go on radio shows quite a lot, whether it's to talk about politics and media advice and that thing, and also about football. But have you been approached to have a radio show? If LBC came and said, we'll give you an hour a week, would you do it?
I have been approached by them and by others. And maybe I'm being a bit lazy here. I don't like committing myself to things that tie up my diary week in, week out. So I probably should do more, and I certainly could do more. And it's, I mean, several radio stations have asked me to have my own program. I think at one point I got approached for Radio 5 Live for a sports thing. I was quite tempted, but again, it would have meant actually not going to games that I want to go to. So, I mean, I've got freedom now, and it's a hell of a thing to give up when you've got it. So I do quite a lot of radio. I like radio, actually. I'll tell you the other thing I really like is, when I've got a book out, I had a football novel out recently, I love it when you do that thing where you're in a studio
and you do 40 in a row
and you do, like, you just do one after the other, because what you get is, you get this flavour, one, of the music that's being played, but also of the stuff that's being discussed, and it's really, really interesting. So quite often, I mean, I remember I was doing one at Broadcasting House, and it was just fascinating, because often I was being dipped into other news discussions that were going on, and they were just all very different to what was happening at the national level. And I quite enjoy that. I do like local radio. Quite often when I'm driving, for example, say going up to football matches in Burnley, I'll just leave the radio tuned to pick up the strongest signal of a local radio station, and you just get a feel for kind of where the debate is, and it's often very, very different to what's happening in London and nationally.
Nigel Farage is here. Nearly 18 months now doing a daily show on LBC. How are you finding that transition from politician to broadcaster? I know you're still a politician.
Well, it's not very different, really, is it? I mean, when you go out canvassing, you know, you knock on doors down the street, and some people don't want to talk to you, and others do, and they have a wide range of views, and you're kind of on their turf, and so even if they're disagree with you, you have to be somewhat respectful. Similarly, if you go in the pub, the local pub, and talk about who the England football manager should be, what we think of Miss World, or whatever it might be, there are loads of people about, and you may go into the pub with an opinion, and somebody there may turn your view around completely with the power of argument. And I've got to tell you something, talk radio isn't very different to that. I feel I'm out there canvassing. Obviously, the joy of being at a commercial station in the shape of LBC is that I'm allowed to set the whole thing up, giving my opinion, and then asking them to come on and challenge me. And I think that gives it a bit more theatre in many, many ways. So look, I'm enjoying it. I'm branching out. I've just got a new podcast going, Farage Against the Machine. You know, it's there on iTunes, whatever. So I'm experimenting now with that as well. I have to say, I mean, I'm a self-confessed 40-year radio addict. I love radio. I've been listening to LBC since I was a kid. Test Match Special. I can't imagine how many thousands of hours of my life I've spent all over the world. I've got TMS on when the test matches are on. So I love talk radio. I'm very much of the view that politics and current affairs in this country are generating more interest than they have done for decades. And I think talk radio's got a great future.
And the people who ring into your show, are they a split of people who agree with you and are kind of wanting to talk to their hero versus the people who want to have an argument?
Oh, Nige, I'm so pleased I'm on, mate. You've saved the country. Or, I hate you, I wish you were dead. But actually, over 18 months, that has softened a little bit. You know, and we're not getting people coming on just to have a row. I can always tell when they want to have an argument. They call me Mr. Farage. Well, Mr. Farage, and, you know they've got to do. But do you know something? I have tried to be polite and respectful of people with very different points of view. And I said last night a couple of times to people making arguments about Palestine versus Israel, a different point of view to the one I had. I said last night, look, you've made your point passionately. You've made it well. I thank you for the call. And I do think that if talk radio can do things unafraid of pushing the boundaries of debate, but doing it with a degree of civility, maybe talk radio can put more back into the open democratic process than our current politicians can do.
We heard on stage about it being that barometer, and radio more so than papers and TV being able to hear from real people and, you know, being able to say, actually, we think this vote's going to go a different way to people think. So it is real life.
I think that's right. Do you know, if you look at the offerings that you get, for example, on a Sunday morning, there's a plethora of television programmes, of radio programmes. I mean, newsprint. You can't even carry all the newspapers out of the shop. They're so heavy. There's so much. And so much of what we see now isn't just journalists talking to politicians. It's journalists talking to journalists and about journalists. I mean, so much of it. The late night paper reviews, all the rest of it. So much has become that. That I do think, you know, radio stations that give the opportunity where the public dominate the debate, gosh, it's quite refreshing.
How's the commitment? Obviously doing a nightly show and a show on a Sunday and now a podcast as well, that's a lot to ask of somebody who hasn't kind of done radio all their life.
It's difficult. And I've always had a huge work ethic. I've always been a nutcase worker, really. I've always worked ridiculous hours, so I'm not bothered about that. I have to say, doing an evening show has imposed a certain discipline upon my lunchtime activities, which perhaps had not been there for the previous 35 years, which I'm quite well known for. The joy of this one is, I was very frank with LBC at the start. I said, look, I'm in Brussels, I'm in Strasbourg, but I'm also in America quite a lot. You know, I've got a lot of, I've worked for American companies, I've obviously got American political connections, and you know, I do stuff in America, and I basically fit my life in around, you know, making sure wherever I am, I can get to a studio in New York or DC or whatever it is. I think in 18 months, apart from the odd holiday here and there, I think I've missed one evening. It's not bad, is it?
I mean,
it's not bad. Now, LBC are in for a shock. I might take some more time off now. I think I've done the apprenticeship.
Have you got somebody with you technically where you are, if you're in Brussels or Strasbourg?
Yeah.
Because obviously it's visualised still wherever you are.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. And normally someone comes with me or whatever. In the case of New York and DC, you know, there is a news agency there who do work for LBC anyway. So we kind of make it work. But yeah, I do. You know, when I'm travelling, I manage to fit the thing in around my day. Once or twice, I mean, I did do it from the West Coast at 3 a.m. on a Sunday morning. That was tough because it's 8 hours behind or whatever it was. But no, I fitted in with my life. I'm enjoying it very much. I mean, I guess if they're happy with me, we'll go on doing it for a bit.
And Piers Morgan and his friend Mr. Trump enabled him to get the first British TV interview with the president. He's obviously coming to this country. Do you think you can get him into Leicester Square for a chat with you?
Well, who's to say? Who's to say? For once, I'm going to be very non-committal.
And finally, you mentioned, obviously, you listen to a lot of radio. It's cricket and TMS. Do you listen to opinions that you don't necessarily agree with? So do you listen to James O'Brien and think...
I do. I have to say, I wish he'd cheer up a bit. I mean, gosh, you know, I'm very pleased I haven't got his... if that political mindset makes you that bloody unhappy, I'm going to stay where I am, is all I can say. No, of course I do. Just as, you know, I've always read articles and books by people with different opinions. I think it's very important to understand all sides of an argument. So yes, I am very happy to listen to people on radio stations, not just LBC, but across the spectrum, to hear other people articulate different points of view. Look, democracy should be about open debate. It should be about the powers of persuasion. And I think we've sunk a little bit into a place where politics is just tribal. You know, my colour's blue, yours is red, I hate you. Well, you know, that's just moronic. And I think we need to do something better with it.
Broadcast Bionics, solutions for radio, sponsors the Radio Today programme.
I'm at the Radio Festival and I think this is Mr. Lewis McLeod, is that right?
I love that guy so much. I almost don't want to tell him I love him because then he'll think I'm kind of taking ownership of his brilliant impression of me. So I just want to let him do his thing. He's a genius.
You listened to the show when it went out. Had you heard it before?
Oh, well, you know, it's a funny one. I only realised it was happening quite late in the day for various... There was a bit of a... I think maybe somebody was going to tell me didn't or something classic thing. And so it was all a bit of a surprise. But when it went out, it really made me laugh. And this is, we're talking about Jeremy Vine, Agony Uncle. Then someone told me that it had the most hits on the iPlayer for Radio 2 that week, you know, and usually it's Pick of the Pops and stuff. So I just thought, good for them. I mean, apart from Lewis, John Holmes is an absolute comedy veteran. He's made so many people laugh so many times. Love him to bits. And been fired about 24 times as well. So this is an unusual programme in that it's one that John Holmes hasn't been fired for.
Yet,
could still happen, that's for sure. Episode 2.
You were talking about fake news here at the Radio Festival. Were there people, do you think, who heard that show go out late at night on a Tuesday night and thought it was real, rather like down the line on Radio 4?
Oh, I suppose so. Yes, probably. And actually, what's funny is that because Lewis has these little sort of squirts of sound on Steve Wright's show where he pretends to be me talking really loudly and speeding up at the end, I'm now fielding about 3 complaints a day from... mainly from pensioners, to be honest, who say, what are you doing on Steve Wright's show? We can't understand anything you're saying. I've actually sort of got tired of saying it's not me, it's an impression, so I think I'll just leave it. But, yeah, I think we're quite generally, the media are quite responsible about what's real and what's not, actually, I think. I think we realise the power of the spoof can go wrong, and I think it's something that's quite chastening when it happens. Well, of course, the best April Fool of all time, I think, on the radio. You know what I'm going to say?
Yeah. Rod Brydon.
Absolutely. Rod Brydon in for Kembrys for the whole show. I had to do my trail. I didn't, only in retrospect did I realise I'm sitting in on the best ever on the radio. Rob held it together every time, and I had serious stories, and I couldn't say, oh, this is all a joke, so I had to be really serious. And every time I said a really serious story, crime or whatever, he would go, that is a very serious issue. And it was fantastic. We had record number of complaints of people saying Ken should be taken off, he sounds ill. Oh, joy, you've just reminded me of that.
In terms of the fake news stuff, you're taking calls on the fly. You've obviously got a production team vetting people before they put them on there. But is there a danger when you are doing a wild and wacky, God, there's nobody going to ring up and tell us that they've ever done this, and they do. How do you believe them and believe the credibility of their story?
That is the question that goes to the heart of the show. There is a trust element. I think that I feel we're in a contract with our audience, that they're there every day because they trust us, and therefore when they call us, we trust them. However, obviously you can have somebody come through. I've written a book recently where there's a chapter or two about one particular person who did hoax us twice going back more than 10 years, and his hoaxes were absolute genius. But by and large, you can tell in the timbre of the voice there's something. And it's also when the story's a bit too good to be true. You know, we did something about I think it was walking for people with disabilities or something, you know, long country rambling, or some guy said, I've got one leg shorter than the other, so I keep walking in circles. And I just knew that was a fake call, and it just wasn't even funny, actually. And so, yeah, I think when the call is too good to be true. But I honestly, it's very rare that we say goodbye and we say that wasn't real. There was one 10 years ago where a guy said he'd been looking after a man who was, I think he said he couldn't speak, he couldn't hear, he couldn't see, he was doubly incontinent, and then he saw him on a Spanish beach windsurfing 2 years later. And we thought, no, that's not true. That was a call on benefit scamming. You got me thinking now. In the end, I suppose the answer is that maybe out of every 100 people who call, if one's a hoaxer, they're not going to get through very often.
You do a lot of outside-the-box things on your show, and I know Tim Johns is quite creative in bringing ideas to life in different ways. is there anything you haven't done yet that you want to do? You know, you've had birds and strange things in the studio and all sorts of things. Are there things on your list that you say, I want to do this one day on the show?
We always try to start with the things people say you can't do on the radio. So we did a series on paintings, for example, which actually, funnily enough, wasn't that successful.
Magic next.
That's why you can't do that on the radio. I mean, Terry Wogan always used to do a fireworks display, didn't he? And he'd just go, ooh, ah. At the weekend, I went to...
Oh, the penny farthing thing,
yes,
I saw that.
Yes, you're ahead of me. Now, I went to have a look at a penny farthing because I just thought, I really fancy finding out what... Because these are the first bikes that were ridden before they had chains on bicycles. So the front wheel had to be so big. And there's a guy who sells them, and I'm thinking I'm buying one. That's just a sort of personal thing. But then I thought, of course, I came into work today. And as we talked about it, we thought, now, wouldn't that be brilliant? But I don't quite... You'll have to help me with the idea. How do we put that on the radio? Me learning to ride a penny farthing and then going on to the streets of London or Manchester, I don't know, and surviving it. And then, of course, also people can get quite down on road safety things. So there's that. I think some of the best things we've done actually have involved something physical. And I always thought, actually, as a reporter, that when something happens while you're recording, that's the thing that the audience suddenly lean into the radio. So it's all very well having lots of voices saying interesting things, but there's nothing more interesting than the reporter suddenly being attacked, for example, as happened to me a few times. And so on we've done a sword fight in the studio. We built a shed in the studio, which I think really annoyed Simon Mayo because it stayed up. I said to the guy who built the shed, he said, how quickly do you want me to take it down? I said, look, to be honest with you, it's great publicity. Just leave the building now, come back in 2 days, and you'll have everyone on Radio 2 asking why there's a shed in the studio, which is exactly what happened. So Chris Evans comes in the next morning. What's a shed doing in here? And that was the night about how quickly can you build a shed. It sounds really obvious now, but I think taking the idea or the story and moving to stage two, which is how do we make this come alive with sound, with actuality, with something actually happening, is the key thing. And on a daily show, it's hard to do that all the time.
Thanks, Jeremy. Just one question. Have you got Adele's number?
Adele's number? Yes, no. I tell you, I wonder if she's heard that show. Thanks, Stuart.
So in the interest of balance, we already heard from Nigel Farage on this podcast. I suppose we'd better speak to somebody else. Ed Miliband is here.
Nice to be with you.
And Jeff Lloyd.
Hello.
So you've just been on stage talking about your podcast and doing your podcast, and everybody's copying you now. It seems there are so many political podcasts since you started.
All these people are sort of Johnny come lately, in my view.
See where they are in the iTunes chart in 6 months' time.
We're the long distance runners in this, aren't we, Jeff? Yeah, we're on episode 34 at the moment. So look, we welcome everybody who's doing it. I mean, I think that's the great thing about the podcast medium is, you know, if people got an idea and a dream, they could make it happen.
This was your dream, was it?
Yeah, exactly. Jeff Lloyd was my dream. Yeah.
Second to winning an election.
Exactly.
And obviously, you talked on stage about your stint at Radio 2. How did you find that as a kind of first experience going on national radio?
Really, really great. And look, it's a very, I should say, it's a very well-produced show with an absolutely brilliant editor and brilliant team. And I know that's what people tend to say, but this is really true in this case. And so, you know, they made it very easy for me. And, you know, it was a fun thing to do.
Did you push any buttons?
No, I didn't get to push the buttons. Jeremy was telling me I should insist on pushing the buttons. But, you know...
just one or two.
I remember I'm not very good with inanimate objects, so I think you don't really want me pushing the buttons. Yeah. I think I was better off laying off the buttons.
Listening to Ed and watching him on stage, he's quite a natural interviewer at asking questions. The way he was... asking questions of some of the audience and asking questions of some of the panel that you had on, that's a skill that a lot of radio people struggle to work on over many years. So what do you think gives him that? Is it his kind of debating background?
I can't look at him in the eye when I say this, but he is just interested in people. He just likes people. He wants to know what makes them tick. He wants to know what they're interested in. And I think, you know, in an interviewer, that's you know, the quality, really, isn't it?
And that comes across, that you just want to talk to people and find out their views.
I mean, oddly enough, and I know many people won't think this is the case, I think to be a politician, actually, it's a kind of requirement to be interested in people. If you don't care about people's stories, then you're not going to learn very much, I think.
The perception is that the politicians aren't, and they're not interested.
Indeed. I'm not saying that within every politician is a great sort of radio or podcaster, a radio broadcaster or podcaster, but I think to the extent that I am good at asking the questions, it's because I care about what people think and their stories.
And did the offers come flooding in? Obviously, you'd already been talking to Jeff about this podcast before you did the Jeremy Vine cover. Did you get more offers to do more things?
I mean, honestly, Hollywood, Bollywood, you know, everything. I mean, I chose Jeff over all those offers. Yeah. You know, I had,
they offered him a Tonight Show.
I had Quentin Tarantino on line one and, you know, Jay Leno on line two, but I thought it's got to be Jeff Lloyd.
And Jeff, life after Absolute for you.
Yes.
This has obviously been a big hit. You've got a couple of other podcasts that you do as well. Things are busy.
Yeah, it is. I'm just trying to do things for the time being that I enjoy, that I'm just sort of falling back in love with it a little bit. Because if you stay in one place for a long time, and I was there for 18 years, I think everybody gets a little bit jaded, and I'm surprisingly unjaded at the moment, yeah.
And in terms of the commitment for you, Ed, obviously working as an MP still and being in Parliament, where you've been today before you came here, how big a commitment is it to say, I'm going to do this every week?
It is a commitment, and it definitely, there are weeks when it's a struggle. I'm helped massively by Jeff and Emma, who produces the podcast. And look, in a way, I see this with a small p as being about politics, you know, my politics, because I'm interested in ideas, and this is a way of bringing the ideas I care about to a wider audience.
It's going deep on a different policy area every week. It is. I mean, you've said before now that you've gone in some weeks knowing very little about a subject, and then, you know, you come out of it feeling very strong. That drug reform is something you've described as a third rail issue that politicians don't want to touch, and having done an episode on it, you know, you're really into drugs now, aren't you?
Exactly. And you know, it's interesting because that's the kind of issue where there's a stock politician answer on drugs, which is, oh, well, it'll encourage, you know, harm, mental health and so on. Actually, when we went into it, you know, we found the two sort of salient facts were, one, when somewhere like Portugal decriminalised drugs, the use didn't go up. And secondly, you know, if you're really concerned about mental health, it's street cannabis that is incredibly dangerous. And so, you know, I think you kind of learn that. That was a process of learning for me by covering the ideas. So I think it's part of my politics.
And as leader of the opposition, you would have been interviewed on the radio many times. Do you prefer being the host, being the interviewer, than the pressure that you had perhaps of, here's my phrase, I've been told by the communications department that I've got to get this message out?
Definitely. I mean, I
told him to say that. I said, here's the message, get it out, so you definitely prefer it.
Keep saying it over and over again.
Strong and stable. I hesitate to say it because it makes it sound like I think it's easy. I don't think it's easy, but you know, there's something about being the person asking the questions rather than someone having been the person answering them, which is a whole different ballgame.
Well, there we are, the end of another busy radio festival. I'm with the managing director of the Radio Academy. It's Roger Cutsforth. How was the day for you?
It was a good day. Inevitably, they're always a little bit stressful. Last minute changes, etc. And I'm just really keen that when people are paying decent money to come along, that they're going to have a good day. And thankfully, the feedback so far, anyway, until they tell me different in the bar, the feedback so far has been really positive, so I've enjoyed it.
And it was a good mix of kind of radio people and a bit of celebrity stardust as well.
Yeah, and you know, get Christian, who's been a great friend of the Academy for so many years and done things for us, to get him to do his last bit before he goes to Australia on Friday was great. Jeremy Vine, fantastic, coming in 24 hours notice and delivering a session like that. What a man. It was just, it was great. And I think one of the high points for me was the young guys from Salford, the students from Salford. I thought they delivered an impassioned and inspiring session.
And you've welcomed three new fellows to the Radio Academy as well today.
Yes, we have. So it's always difficult trying to get them here under false pretenses and then present them with their awards. So the first one was Siobhan Kenny, Chief Exec of Radio Centre. I managed to get Alistair Campbell to come down and present hers with that, and that was fantastic. Then Sally Aitchison, who couldn't be with us today, but we presented hers. Sally Aitchison, MBE, I should say. 10 years as MD of Bowers Cash for Kids and raising an enormous amount of money. It was fantastically and well-deserved. And then Caroline Raphael with her CV that's just to die for, and that's presented by Phil Critchlow. So it was great, and Lauren picked up on it at the end that all the fellows awarded today were women, and you know, it's 100 years of anniversary of female suffrage, and so we felt it was appropriate that all of our fellows this year should be female.
On to the next thing. The ARIA is in October. Planning starts now, I guess.
Yeah, it started a few weeks ago, actually, and I can't seem to switch my head, so I'm going to go have a week away holiday, and then straight into the Arias and Segway as well, which is the 2 days leading up to the Arias, which is a bit of a mini festival up in Leeds for the people going up there, and we're really excited about some of the plans we've got for that.
Well, thanks, Roger, and the Radio Academy and the team from the festival for putting on another great event.
Thanks, Stu. Great. Cheers, mate.
At james.crid.land, on the Radio Today UK podcast and in your favourite podcast app, I'm James Cridland, the radio futurologist. This week, a look at a new London radio station. I talk a lot about making the most of your radio station's content. The tyranny of the transmitter, something that needs feeding 24 hours a day, means that historically we're not that good as an industry making sure that we capture and reuse our content in other ways. Much of what we do in radio is informed by our history and tradition rather than what's right for today's programme making. Live radio is one of those things. In the 1920s and 1930s, it was the only way to make great radio. But these days, far too much of radio is lazy live content rather than well-polished audio. So it's fun then to take a peek at new radio stations, because they have the opportunity to get things right from the get-go rather than have to reinvent things later on, because change is hard. Love Sport is a radio station in London which focuses on sports talk. It's on AM and DAB in London and everywhere from Radio Player, TuneIn and the Amazon Alexa. They've worked hard to make sure that they're available where the audience is. One look at the website at lovesportradio.com shows that this station doesn't just focus on live radio. The Listen Live and On Demand buttons are the same size in the same place. It doesn't matter how you listen, as long as you do. And by the looks of it, every single show is available on demand. They use clips of what they've broadcast on Facebook, a social medium which does rather better than Twitter for short pieces of audio, since Facebook is less of the moment and rather better at surfacing posts from the last few days. One of the more interesting sections of this station is evenings and weekends. And it's here that Love Sport benefits from being in a city with 11 professional league football teams. The station broadcasts fan podcasts from each club. Last week, the station announced that it had made those podcasts available on smart speakers in a partnership with Zap Media. And it's another clever way for the station to associate itself with sports fans. And while smart speaker consumption is still relatively low, it's still a good time to get into these services. Finally, and for noting, the station is known as Love Sport on air, but Love Sport Radio off air, in logos and online. In the new multi-platform radio world, many brands mistakenly try to drop the word radio rather than help redefine it. But this station hasn't made that mistake. It's tempting when you launch a new station to do radio the way it's always been done, but better and braver to design your programming and distribution strategy based on radio in the late 2010s rather than the early 1980s. You can get my weekly newsletter at james.crid.land and daily podcast news at podnews.net. And until next time, keep listening. Radio
Moments. So how's your show gone this week? All right. Well, if you were on the pirate ship Radio North Sea International this week in 71, you wouldn't forget it in a hurry.
This is the Meebo 2. This is the Meebo 2 on fire. This is the Meebo 2 on fire. SOS, Mayday, 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 SOS. This is an SOS call from Radio North Sea International. Once again, we have trouble. Somebody's bombed us this time. 4 miles from the coast of Scheveningen, the radio ship Meebo 2 is on fire. We need help immediately. We need help immediately.
What amazes me most is he hits the posts in the music, even when he's risking his life. The pirate ship Meebo 2, home of the popular Radio North Sea International, being firebombed by raiders. Dramatic broadcasting from this week in 1971. These were clearly very dangerous days in radio, not least when you invite one of the biggest pop acts of the day to a racetrack. Former Radio 1 controller Johnny Beerling remembers this week in 1975.
He said, when these Bay City Rollers arrive, there'll be a riot. I said, well, that's quite simple. I will cancel them, because I was flying them in by helicopter and I knew the pilot. I said, I'll call up and cancel. If you cancel them, there'll be a riot. I said, well, I'm not sure quite what we're going to do then. But what we decided to do was, instead of bringing them onto the road show parked on the outside of the track, there was an island in the middle of this lake. So I phoned Mike Barrett, the pilot, and said, look, when you bring the rollers in, land them on the island in the middle of the lake.
We really must make an appeal to the fans, actually, if they can hear us, to keep away from the racetrack, because Rollers fans are all over the place now, and in the interest of their own safety, if they can hear me over the address system here, they really must keep away from the racetrack, because
that's a record that the Rollers picked out as their particular favourite. That was the Beatles and All You Need Is Love. We have the most amazing scenes going on here this afternoon, as you can no doubt hear, partly going on behind us since the Rollers have been here. We have a little river surrounding, well, two various parts of the track here, and the girls are actually swimming across the river to try and get at their idols.
And I just was horrified. I mean, very, very worried. I really thought I was going to be fired. I thought kids would be killed. I was lucky. I think there was one child with a sprained ankle, and that was the only thing. But my wife and I were dragging them out of the water and laying them on the bank on the side there. They were sobbing and crying.
Johnny Beerling and the legendary David Hamilton continuing valiantly as Radio 1 chaos ensued at Mallory Park this week in 75. This week last year, we lost the former regulator John Thompson. John was described as the founding father of commercial radio in the early 70s.
First of all, there were a large number of applicants. The first areas we dealt with were London, Manchester, Birmingham and Glasgow. And also, there were a number of good applicants in all of those areas. When I say good applicants, I mean above all what I personally was concerned with was that the contractor was likely to be lively. The whole point, really, was to have in this additional service of radio, if at all possible, I mean, a reliable but an unstuffy outfit. I mean, I think I later on coined the phrase of talking about independent radio being radio in jeans.
John Thompson, who died this week last year, the first director of radio as the Independent Television Authority, assumed Radio 2 and became the Independent Broadcasting Authority, commercial radio's first regulator. Back then, each station was independently owned and separately programmed. Nowadays, networking is commonplace and very efficient too, but in the late 80s, it was quite a feat technically to join stations together, and if you did, how did you brand the combined service, if at all? This week, 31 years ago, saw the birth of the Yorkshire Radio Network. Here's the launch with Keith Skews on sponsor line duty.
Yorkshire Radio Network, weather!
Brought to you this hour in association with Abroad, your newest computerised travel agent.
Remaining dry at first, but a little rain will spread into the region overnight on a north-westerly wind. Overnight, temperatures will fall to around... Well, it's here. Yorkshire Radio Network. Culmination of Radio Hallam in Sheffield, Pennine Radio in Bradford, and Viking Radio in Hull. My name's Tim Finlay. Sitting down thinking, how are we going to start a brand new station and a brand new show off? Well, I thought we'll dedicate this one to the engineers who made it all possible, the management who are sitting quietly drinking, and of course the DJs have got to run it to you between 8 p.m. and 6 a.m. every weekday morning. Appropriately enough, thought Queen would start it off. Radio Gaga. Good evening.
Yes, hello to the Yorkshire Radio Network this week in 1987. And lovely Tim there mentioned the engineers. If only to hit the vocal. Now, if you have the time, let's pay a little trip to the Radio Brand Burial Ground, shall we? Come on. Through the gate we go. What's that over there? What's this?
Radio Blackburn.
Oh, it's good old Radio Blackburn, isn't it? My goodness. What's this one here?
Galaxy.
Tragic that was, wasn't it? Died so young. What's this little one here? A very overgrown.
Your music and your friends.
Oh, and here's another one I remember.
Radio Trent 301.
And I tell you what, this was sad, this one.
BBC Radio 7.
And what's this psychedelic tombstone over here?
There's music on every wave, and the tide's always coming in when you're in tune with 200 meters Radio Atlanta. The time is 20 minutes until 7 o'clock.
Yes, a very early, short-lived radio brand, just to prove that nothing's new in radio. This week in 1964 saw the first day on air for Radio Atlanta, broadcasting from the North Sea. It adopted the Caroline brand 2 months later. So with Buzz FM launching in Birmingham 28 years ago, later choice then Galaxy, now Capital.
The station says, and I quote, it aims to satisfy the heart, soul and feet.
Russell Crowe walking out on Radio 4's Mark Lawson, and who can blame him, 8 years ago.
You've got dead ears, mate. You've seriously got dead ears if you think that's an Irish accent.
Primetime Radio closing on DAB 13 years ago.
And a very good morning to you from everybody at Primetime Radio.
The final Russ Williams Rock and Roll Football on Absolute 2 years ago.
I will miss you, it goes without saying. I miss this building, I miss the team.
Marjorie Anderson leaving Woman's Hour after 15 years, replaced by Sue McGregor 45 years ago.
From time to time in Woman's Hour, we've heard women who took an active part in the suffragette movement talk.
And Neil Kinnock famously kebabbed on The World at One on Radio 4 29 years ago.
For Christ's sake, we're the opposition, they're the government. They've cocked it up totally. Well, I am not going to sit here and be bloody quizzed on the alternatives. He's the Chancellor of the Exchequer. He's buggered it up totally.
Those are this week's Radio Moments.
David Lloyd's
Radio Moments.
Thank you, David and James, and my guests at the Radio Festival 2018. Next week, we'll hear from Alan Bezick at BBC Radio Manchester on the first anniversary of the Manchester Arena bombing. And Trevor Dan reports from the British Podcast Awards. Join us for that.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionic, creating and distributing clever software for radio.